You're listening to the Law of Attraction Radio Network.
Welcome to Quantum Leap Book Club. During the next hour, beloved mind scientist Parisha and her guests from around the world will read and discuss various best-selling books with well-known authors. Every show will apply retention techniques designed to help you to absorb powerful knowledge to effectively change your life. Join us every week for a thought-provoking hour and re-listen as often as you can. You will be delighted by what you learn, and you will be excited by the results. Are you ready to take the quantum leap? Here's Parisha.
Hello, this is the Quantum Leap Book Club, and our regular host, Parisha, will not be joining us tonight as she's traveling and teaching. And we have our co-hosts here, and these are Geraldine Dobley Mall, an environmental biologist from Sydney, Australia. Then we have Drina Cooper, who's a lifelong entrepreneur and lives in Denver, Colorado. And we also welcome Marion Law, a psychologist in her own practice in Melbourne, Australia. Hi, Marion. And we have Dr. Joyce Mollenhauer, a doctor of neuropathy and a registered nurse from Kingman, Arizona. Welcome, Joyce.
Hello.
And what we are covering tonight is, again, our book this week is Mind Over Matter by Dr. Fred Alan Wolf. He's a theoretical physicist and explores quantum physics and consciousness. And we are still in chapter four. We are completing chapter four, which is called Inertia, the Mysterious Resistance. And I welcome everybody to join us in the discussion who is on board tonight. Thank you for being here. And we're looking forward to hear your comments and your ideas and thoughts about this chapter, which is really important to create. We are broadcasting the Law of Attraction Radio Network. So let us begin. So chapter four is about the mysterious inertia or the resistance. We have discussed inertia before, which is an innate principle of reality, that things which are standing still don't want to move, and things which are moving don't want to stand still. So what we're actually discussing tonight is a major principle of the universe. And the question is, why is resistance so important in creation, in creating our reality, in creating something new? And I'm starting with the idea that there is really no inertia greater than what is in our mind, which is a quote from this chapter. And I'd like to hear other maybe co-hosts, what would they like to say? And I think we're going to start with Atrina about the famous trickster.
Hi, everyone. I'm really happy to be here tonight. Good to see you all. The trickster. This is opening up on about page 57. And the trickster, as Dr. Wolf says, sits at this inertia door. So the way I look at it, it's when something new pops in and we start getting excited about it, and all of a sudden this little trickster pops up in the back of our mind and starts asking a lot of questions, or starts saying, you know, that may not work, or you've been here before. We've worked on this before. No, we haven't. You know, it's not going to happen. And so the point he's making is that this inertia, this trickster that's there, kind of holds us back a little bit so that we start building our energy up to actually push through to begin to create again. But the crazy thing about the trickster is he uses the tools. If you remember earlier in the chapter, we talked about those four axioms of desire. We talked about feelings being energy and thoughts being time, senses as space, and intuitions as motion. Well, these are the tools that we use all the time when we're working with inertia, when we're working to get beyond it. And the trickster pulls those out. And the way he describes it here is that we have these mind maps that we've created. So we've created them. They're like our stories, our preconceived reality of what could happen, based on the stories that we've created from past experiences. And we start playing and focusing on those more than we do the opportunity that's sitting in front of us. So he makes a really interesting point on page 58 where he says, "This piece cannot be overstated. We misuse our tools when we resist using them to deal with our real experiences in favor of our imaginal experiences." So if we have an opportunity show up and we start using these tools to start looking at the past or all the stories that we make up in our mind or that the trickster brings forward to us, and we focus on that, like, "I can't do that," or "It's impossible," or "So-and-so said this," or "I had this experience," instead of looking and going, "Wow, this is a new opportunity that's shown up for me." And we don't use our tools in looking at that opportunity, we can get really stuck. So from that point, it can become painful. It can become a challenge. We can bounce back and forth and go, "Wait a minute. This would be really fun to do, but I don't know if I want to do it. Oh, darn, I wished I could do it. I missed the opportunity. I went back on my old patterns," and we get ourselves tied up in a knot. So the thing is to recognize the fact that the trickster brings these things forward, but don't get stuck by them. Just recognize them and then move into the new experience and allow your thoughts and your emotions and your feelings, the intuitions, to work with the new experience. So that's kind of what I wanted to share to get us going tonight.
Thank you very much. Yeah, the trickster is very mysterious, also as is the resistance. And I really think, as just you described it, it has a lot to do with what we already believe and identify with, and that stands in the way. So who would like to go next, I think? Geraldine, you said you wanted
yes.
to say something next?
Yeah, that's right. And it's an interesting point here that there's even that part where it says there are times one can't even trust their intuition. And I think it plays in well with what's been shown in brain research that shows that when we've had a traumatic event or something's gone on in our life, we can have a particular belief that goes into our thinking, into our brain, and that could be triggered and we could get a feeling that something is bad. But in the present moment, it actually isn't that bad. It's just that we're being reminded of something in the past. So there's these multiple layers that if we can understand our mind and our brain and how it works, and that allows us then, because this whole thing is the trickster standing at that doorway, as they say, of the mind matter. And the mind matter doorway really is, okay, what side am I on? And if we're going to make a decision or to create something, as it says here, how do we release ourselves from preconceived notions of reality? And then it goes on to say, sometimes we can't trust intuition, sometimes we can't trust what we see. So more and more it's like, as he said, I could still be fooled. So the key thing is to ask who's talking. Who's talking when we're interpreting the physical world around us? Who's talking when that little voice is coming up inside? And when we stop to say who's talking, that gives that moment to say, is this old? You know, as they've told us many times, it's like, is it the past that's informing us right now? And then when it's talking about that inertia, what can happen is that past might have had a whole lot of heaviness around it. Trauma, fear, rejection, anything. And so the trickster is showing us, hey, look at all those things. That's why you don't want to do it now. Or look at all those things. Or it could even be the other way. Wow, that really worked well for you last time. Just rush in and do it. So it's up to us to be at that point to say, what am I pulling from the past? And it's okay to learn from the past and move forward. But what is there? Just don't automatically do it. Stop and ask. Who's talking? And it says there on page 59, we must use all of our tools. All of our tools. So the wonderful new information in brain research, what we've learned so much from ancient wisdoms, and look beyond. So there's also that part where it says, you know, it's a delicate map and a delicate web of what's going on. So the universe itself tells us what comes next in the story of our life. And this is where we're saying, do we influence what's out there, or are we letting out there influence us? And absolutely, it's a two-way dance. So it says, be ready for the unexpected. So it's not just that because we think it's going to be a certain way, it is. That's what, now the manifestation principle allows us to know that and really go with that. However, there's also a whole lot of other collective consciousnesses going on and thinking and living and breathing. And we do live shared. As we learned from last week, the separateness is really what's the illusion. So given that we're a collective, our thoughts are also simultaneously influencing the universe, and the universe is having a feedback onto us. And what's that point? It's the trickster at the door. So the key here is to ask who's talking.
Thank you very much, Geraldine. I think that's really important to be aware what is actually talking in our head. And it's not always the new creations. It's mostly that what we believe in and who we identify ourselves as. What I really think is exciting when he says we must be ready for the unexpected. I think that's maybe a secret to creation. So anyone else who wants to share? We are around page 60-61 for the others. Yes, Marianne, please.
Hi there. Yeah, so I thought it'd be good to recap on what was on page 56, which was how he talks about taking a step forward, and then after that we have a couple of steps backwards. And so what he's talking about in taking that step forward, that we're imagining and creating our reality through what we imagine. And I know a lot of us are doing a meditation practice where we go into the nothingness, into the no thing, into the blackness. And then from that space, we then imagine the reality we're creating. So if we're wanting more wealth, we might imagine lots of gold all around us, or we might imagine anything we're creating, and we make that step forward by imagining a new reality and doing that from within the nothingness. And then he says what happens after that. So he says that's the present going into the future. And then he says what happens is we take a couple of steps back, and that's when the future then comes back to the present and feeds this present moment after we've put that out there. And that's when, how I've understood this, we meet all the internal programming that's within us, like our beliefs of the past, you know. And if it feels familiar, this is what I feel I've learned from grandmother. If it feels familiar, we're actually not changing. If it feels familiar, that is the past talking, because that's the old chemistry. I mean, if you suddenly won $20 million and you didn't already have $100 million, it would feel unfamiliar. And you'd probably have a chemical reaction to that that would be new. And then you'd have to start identifying as this person with $20 million, you know, and then that would then cascade into something else. And so you'd tell the difference between the old state and this new state. And I think the trickster is weaved itself into the familiar and the comfortable. And that's how, in my interpretation of this, we can set ourselves back, because we might imagine this amazing new future reality, and then the future feeds back to the present, and then we buy into the old story, whatever that old story is. And so then we can get held back by the old story, or what he's calling the trick, or what they're calling the trickster here. I love the way Trini said the trickster was a he. I'm not sure what that meant. But the trickster's in all of us. And I'm not sure if it has a gender. But it'd be a good topic of conversation.
Yeah, thank you, Marianne. That was very good that you were shed some light on that future coming back to us, because I never quite understood that concept. I think that is really the idea that it probably does trigger then, with the information it sends, our old programs and who we are as a trickster. So we are around page 60, 61, 62, or anything else you want to share or ask or questions about the chapter. Joyce, please.
Sure. I'm sitting here chuckling, because is the trickster male, female, or maybe it's a dog? Or maybe it's a deer that's come into our yard and eaten all our garden. or maybe it's one of these wonderful quail that have just arrived in my yard. The trickster, to me, is that part of life that is giving us a little bit of a challenge. And I was intrigued at one place in this chapter where Dr. Wolf actually speaks of the trickster at times helping us, but we don't know that he's helping us, or he or she or it's helping us. And then we don't even move with what is suggested, or we don't resist it, or we don't learn from it always. But sometimes we do learn from it. So as I was reading this chapter today, I was thinking, this is like being in a labyrinth. And we built a labyrinth once in Ohio. And you walk down the paths and around the paths, and then you have to go back on your tracks because you come to a dead end. Well, I think this is kind of what the story that he's woven. And in one of these pages, he talks about you're actually leading yourself into a muddy forest, and your feet get heavier and heavier. And there you are, not sure which tree you're going around and what was your first goal. And what is this mysterious way of living that we have? And we are so familiar with some of our habits, many of our habits, maybe most of our habits, that we aren't too keen on letting them go. So the trickster kind of is what walks with us when we're trying to sort that out. And for me, I think the clue, I can't remember which one of you said it, but I think the bottom line for this whole chapter is we need to be open to the unexpected. And by being open to the unexpected, we get out of this trap of the things that make us feel like we're separate. And when we're absolutely connected with each other. So this mysterious life we have is just a sequence of unpredictable creative actions. So we do get creative in our moments, but some of the creativity is leading us down the same paths. So that's where the trickster comes in, and we have to recognize, okay, is this where we want to be? Or is this just the same old thing that we've been doing? So breaking free of the illusion of being separate from each other is one of the clues, and that along with being open to the unexpected so that we can move in a brand new direction. So that's what I like to say right now.
Thank you, Joyce. Anyone else who wants to share a comment on that or add to this? I think what is really comes up all the time in what you're sharing is I hear the words unfamiliar, uncomfortable. So it looks like the moment we create, and we all have done this. So what is really exciting about this chapter is just tells us what we did. We mm-hmm. all were in a situation where we had to create, but we did it kind of unconsciously or automatically or magically. We jumped out of our old thinking and just suddenly something opened. I think Robbie was sharing that last time, how she just jumped into something opening. But this chapter is really explaining the process very detailed, that how can we move into creation, which is coming from nothing? So that means it is uncomfortable, it is unfamiliar. So if anyone else would like to share something about that. I can talk about an idea I had recently that I was just thinking about setting up a text I wanted to present in a conference. And I've been going backwards first. I mean, automatically you go backwards and think, okay, what do I know? What have I done? What has been in my mind? And you keep going backwards and nothing excited me. You know? And then I kind of quiet down and said, okay, don't worry. Don't go into your old bag of what you know. Just be open what comes to you. Exactly what Marian said, what comes to you. And then ideas started to just show up. And I think that's that magic moment. It's nothing like really big creation, whatever. It's just these little things where we just open ourselves to what comes up. So if anyone else would like to share about that, it would be great. One of the things, yes, thank you, Mike. Go ahead.
I got a couple of things I wanted to share, some specific to what you guys have said and some more general. First of all, I have to say that when I read this chapter again, because I've read it before, but when I read it again, it really pissed me off. This whole chapter just got under my nerves, like right from the beginning. He starts saying about how scientists really aren't creative. All we do is transform stuff. We don't create anything. So that was an insult to me right from the beginning. And then he got onto this part that I think Marianne was talking about, or maybe Geraldine, on page 59 there, where he says, we misuse our tools when we resist using them to deal with our real experiences in favor of our imaginal experiences. So I got kind of into that, and I was reading on, and then I get on to the next page, and he basically says, yeah, but you can't trust your intuition. You can't do this. You can't do that. You never really know, and you got to kind of wait for the universe to let you know what's happening. So it's like, why am I reading this book? You know? So I started to get like, whoa, what's happening? Why am I having this reaction? And it all started to fall into place a little bit for me after I got over my comfortable, familiar reaction, right? And I realized, how do I see this like in my everyday life? And so when I went back and reread this part about we misuse our tools when we imagine all the things that can't go right about what we really want to create, I think about who are the big creators? Who are the people right now that we know of that we sort of look up to and go, wow, how do they manage to get all this done? And I'm thinking of guys like Elon Musk and even, you know, Jeff Bezos and these guys who stuck with ideas through thick and thin, and just they never seem to see the fact that it can't work. They just always see that it can work. And I realize what they do is they don't get caught up in imagining why it can't work. They just put all their energy into making it work. Mm-hmm. And that sort of explained to me how all this, what this all meant in a sort of a tangible way to me. And when I first started reading this, I Marianne, you referred to the meditation of the blackness. And that's one thing that I love to do. And I've been asking myself over and over and over again, okay, I'm in here. How do I go from being in the blackness to actually tangibly creating something? And it's like this piece has always been missing for me, but I'm looking for it. And as I read this chapter, I realized it's resistance. All it takes is a little bit of resistance for something to pop into reality. Mm-hmm. And so that's my newest aha moment reading this chapter after I know I met Fred Alan Wolf. I actually had an opportunity to spend some time with him one time with grandmother. And so I love the guy, but he pissed me off at the beginning of this chapter.
Appreciate that. Thank you. Anyone else? Yeah, I think that is really great, Mike, what you said, because I had the resistance to the chapter too, last time especially. And just when it comes to the end of the chapter, it's kind of a relief because it gives you like the solution, so to speak, you know. And I think that the idea of jumping and making that leap into the unknown, like, you know, we said that Amazon or so, they had an idea, but still they were constantly in the unknown how to go about it. I mean, they just kept that idea. I think that's part of it too. You keep that idea, but you are in the unknown about how to do it. And you have to really just jump into a life of mysterious things and just work with your intuition to be guided to the next step. That's creation. Or you go back to what you already know. That doesn't work if you have an absolutely new idea. Maybe anyone else can share something. Yeah, Joyce
I forgot to mention for Marianne, the answer to your question about the trickster's gender is on the bottom of page 61. And it says, the trickster is our image of ourselves. So we are whatever we want the trickster to be. It is whatever we want it to be. Or whatever we think we are, I guess.
Yes, Joyce, you wanted to say something? And then Marianne?
Yes, I think it's quite interesting that this chapter is about resistance. And I think we have a very clever author here in Dr. Wolf, that he wrote it in a way that we can experience resistance so that then when we talk about it and see what he's saying it leads to, we've already gone through it. So I think a sense of humor is pretty important in this, because it's leading us out of what we know and wanting us to be welcoming and celebrating something that comes in that's totally new and unknown. So it's quite fun. I go back to the labyrinth. I think he's playing games with us a little bit, but for a purpose. And he knows why he's helping us resist some of the thoughts he's giving out.
I like, this is Marianne again. I like how when we read this and then we're already doing some things in practices, and I like how we can put them together and they make more sense about why we've been doing a particular practice. And I think one of the practices that helps me understand this is the one where we actually practice being the new self and feeling the new feelings and thinking the new thoughts and scripting those new thoughts and acting it out before we're it. Because I believe in combination with imagining a new reality and then acting and being that new reality, that actually bypasses all this resistance that he's talking about here. Because the resistance, in my understanding, is actually the programming. And if we do the work to reprogram, then it can be smooth sailing. We don't have to identify as resistance as this hardship we're all going to be going through once we to create a new reality. Why can't it be smooth? And what would make it smooth is if we truly believe and felt we were already that being that had that experience, and we knew it deep from within our own, you know, soul and within the cellular mass that we are. And so that's why I quite enjoy what Dr. Joe Dispenza often talks a lot about, which is, you know, the practice of visioning it before it's here, like be it first, feel it first, see it first, and do lots and lots of day-to-day, moment-to-moment practice around living it first. And I feel like that then bypasses this. We could trick the trickster. That's what I reckon we can do.
Yes, I saw Deb raising her hand. Would you like to share?
Yes, I would. Thank you. So when it talks about there is no greater, no inertia greater than our own previous mindset, and Marianne was, you know, touching on that, and just getting over what we actually believe. I'm working with somebody right now in a sales context with very large quantities of a particular product. And some of the people that I talk to go, well, I don't believe that that's even possible. I don't believe there could be that many on the planet. And it's like, okay, well, you're going to represent this to somebody else. If you can't believe it, guess what? The person you're trying to represent it to it is not going to believe it either. And that's their own mindset. And the thing is, years ago in motivational, you know, classes and programs, we used to talk about the 80% rule. I'm sure a lot of you remember that, where you get, or the 80% wall, where you get 80% into your goal or what you're doing, and then you hit this wall. And most people stop. Most people stop. But the truly motivated person that wants to change does what it, the extra effort at that point of what it takes to get through that wall. And that's that resistance that he's talking about. And I was just sharing the story this morning with somebody. It's out of one of the Napoleon Hill and J. Clement Stone tapes, where they talk about a man who had a gold mine in California, and he worked it and worked it and worked it. And finally, he just exhausted all of his resources. He just gave up. And he sold the mine and walked away from it. And the guy who bought it went 2 more feet and hit the biggest mother load of gold in California to this date in history. So, you know, it just shows that resistance, whether it's, well, there's nothing outside of us, it's all inside of us. It's, you know, and I know people have already shared maybe on this call or on other calls where Grandmother Parisha talks about she actually measures the strength of what she has put out by the opposition that comes in. And Mike, you're familiar with physics principles. Many of us are, you know, for every action, there is what? An equal and opposite reaction. So it's for us to be measured by that, but also then know that we need to move through and past it to get to where we want to go. Thanks.
I love that, Deb, because it made me think a lot about, well, a couple of you have said some things about the people who are successful and what they need to do to achieve it. And my son's really successful. And one of his mottos is, I will not be defeated. So, and he looks at things in a way that when the resistance comes up, it just means it's not that pathway, or maybe it's not that resource. But if he stays focused on his goal, or if we stay focused on a goal that we, each of us have, when that resistance comes up and we look at it, and it really becomes a choice of being aware of the fact and noticing the resistance and where is it coming from and who's saying it, then we can make our choices. And when we realize that the universe is full of opportunities, it's full of resources, it's full of potential, well, maybe the one we were directed at really isn't exactly what we're looking for, but the better one's going to show up. And as I was listening to you, the other thing that came to me was, I remember being in a training once, and one of the kind of the mantras that we kept saying was, no, 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 it's not fear, it's excitement. And the whole thought was that it's the same energy that you're expanding, whether you want to go into this fear and panicky place, or if you can say, I'm so excited about this, you know, something's about to happen. And usually resistance means something is about to happen. So if we can just simply shift a little bit into that, saying, oh my gosh, the resistance is showing up, that means something's going to happen. It just, all of a sudden, it kind of catapults us into something. So it's actually kind of a fun game. I think of it almost like a slingshot, where you have to pull it back in order to let it go and fly. So that resistance in that rubber band is there, and that just catapults it forward. And so it's just exciting. It's exciting when that resistance comes up. We just need to be observant enough not to use our tools to dive into the resistance, but dive into the potential of what can happen.
Well, that was exactly what I was thinking, Trina. And as you were saying it, I was thinking that in the Chinese written language, the pictogram that they use for chaos can also be interpreted as opportunity. I think that goes right along with what you were saying. I was going to, and I saw Mary, you put up your hand. So if you had something to say about this, maybe you should go ahead, because I wanted to change the subject a little bit. So why don't you jump ahead of me, Mary, and then I'll come back.
Okay, well, it fits perfectly. It's a note that I have from one of the times that we read this with grandmother. And it says, we have to realize that resistance is a positive. Get up and do. So it's just the same. When resistance comes, we realize that it's our opportunity now to put our action in. And when we put our action in, we've changed our neurons and we've allowed the new in, and we have our treasure.
So if it's okay, I wanted to bring us over to page 58, because this was something that I thought was kind of interesting. It's right at the top, and he says, hence, to overcome inertia, we must release previous ways of thinking. So I think that's kind of what we've been saying. But then he goes on to say, not by opposing them, but by allowing them to be expressed. Mm-hmm. There's no greater inertia than our own previous mindset. So it's, I'm just curious as to how other people read this. How do you read this? Okay, we have to let our previous mindset be expressed. So I'm just not clear, and I'd love to hear some other thoughts on that.
Yeah, I thought about that.
You
guys. Got us all excited, Mike. I was thinking about that one too. And I guess as a psychologist, right, so I deal in this space quite a bit. And one way I understood it was that if there is a dominant emotional charge with a really underlying heavy negative belief that a person is not conscious of, then it will really get in the way if it's functioning there. It'll get in the way they'll logically think, no, they're doing everything they can, they've got a positive mindset, and yet this functions in the background. And so until that's expressed, brought to conscious awareness and reprogrammed or re-scripted, or the neurons are sort of pulled apart and then put back together and the emotional charge is taken off it, it will keep causing them havoc, right? It will keep making choices for you. And you'll just think, oh, but I'm doing all this, but still this thing in the background's doing its own work. So that's how I understood what he said. And yet I also had a reaction to what he was saying here, because even having said that, we still don't need to buy that we have to express every part of our unconscious reality or every part of those opposing thoughts in order to create our reality. We don't. You think those people that got us to the moon, you know, all had clear unconscious programs? I don't think they did. They just managed to override them by a focused intention and staying on focus and on intention. You know what I mean by that? I really believe we don't have to go into every part of our psyche and clear it out in order to create. But if there's a dominant part, yep, get it clear if that's what's in your way.
I'd like to make a comment here. I've took this whole paragraph as a very positive direction for us. That what he's saying is that we don't have to feel like we've got a wall that we're trying to get through. We don't, this opposition that we might feel with resistance. I felt that he was saying we allow what that resistance is going to lead us to. And then he goes on to say it's our own previous mindset. And this is kind of where Marianne was referring to, that the inertia can be very strong in our previous mindset. So I felt that a sentence about expressing it meant that we allow ourselves to be open, is where I took it. And that way, and that's how we learned to talk, walk, and ride the bicycle, because we didn't hold on to what we felt was we were afraid we might fall, or we, you know, we're going to feel foolish or whatever. We didn't hold on to any of those things. We just moved forward and we expressed what our intention was, and then we succeeded. So I think this is about the most positive section in this whole chapter to me.
I hear that too. And I'm happy to hear that, Joyce. And also what Marianne said there is that, you know, you can just bypass some of this old stuff. But what I found really key was page 61 says that basically the bit I've underlined and put in a box is the trickster is our image of ourself. Mm-hmm. And then the bigger sentence of that is the trickster is not a perverse being standing at the doorway to creativity. The trickster is our image of self. Thus, the trickster can keep the universe together by offering proper resistance. So we have this term here of proper resistance. And really, as long as we can look at the image of ourself, and as Marianne mentioned there's times when you look at an image of yourself and you can be negative on yourself, then what are you inviting in? I can't do this. This happened last time, blah, blah. That's your image of self. Or your image of self could be, it's so important that I'm always able to fix everything and do everything. That could be your image of self. And that might be, you know, an aberrated thought from a, you know, a previous belief. So as Joyce said, it's a very liberating one. And as Dr. Fred Alan Wolfe says himself, the trickster is our image of ourself. So how awesome is that? It's not something else controlling us. We we create and reinforce our self-image.
Mm-hmm. One of the things, if I look at page 57, he's the whole conversation about releasing the previous ways of thinking, not by opposing, but by allowing them to be expressed, is he's talking about the one step forward, two steps back, where in pushing away from the inertia, from the real, is the step forward. And then when we do that, we come into our, bam, here we come into the brick wall, trying to get into the imaginal, but we've stepped away from the real, as he puts it here. And in moving forward from the real, we step into our own thinking, which is the inertia, which is the two steps back. So if we simply, I kind of see it in instead of, so when we take one step forward from the real and we encounter an inertia, which is our thinking, if rather than it being an opposition, saying our thinking is wrong, I'm not going to get to the imaginal this way by encountering my thinking, to say, oh, here's some thinking. I think that's the overpass. Here's my thinking. I'm going beyond it. So rather than opposing it, acknowledging it, and keep going.
Mm-hmm. This, you know, this reminds me of, Mary, and you and I both were involved in ACN at one time. If you remember at that time, what did they always tell us? Keep your mind on the goal. Don't even think about what can't go wrong. You know, it sounds like everybody's saying the same thing. But it also reminds me of something else that exercises that we've done in the past. And I remember one time starting a project with grandmother where she asked everybody in the project to sit down and write all the reasons why we couldn't succeed. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, really come face to face and see them. And I sort of see a parallel here in that if you write it down and you say, okay, that's my reason why I'm not going to make it. And then you can now start to use your creativity to see why you can get past those. So I guess you're all helping me come to my own understanding, which I appreciate.
We've got the right brain who's, you know, the left brain saying no, it couldn't possibly, and the right brain's looking at it and saying it has to be the opposite. Well, yes, you can. But the right brain doesn't have a chance to say yes, you can, if the left brain hasn't expressed itself. So now you've got the arcing, and now you can have the chance to have the solution. That's kind of cool. I hadn't thought of that.
And what comes to me sometimes is just the simple act of repairing something. I don't know if you ever had that situation where you were trying to repair something and you did what you know, and you did and you did and you did and it didn't work and it didn't work and it kept on going, just like Mike said, you know, you were just in that what you know, and you expressed that by using the tools you had, you know, and the mind tools and the real tools. And then suddenly what happened? You remember that moment? Suddenly you had this idea, you know, to do something completely different, and it worked. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm trying to keep it on a simple example, so to speak, because creation is happening not only with paintings and creating Amazon. It happens when you repair something, you know, or when you ride a bike, like Joyce said. So anyone who wants to maybe share more about that, that would be great. Yes, Veronica, go ahead.
One of the things that has certainly made me think about is the statement that the Buddha says, you won't understand the karma and you won't understand the benefit. And how when you're on a journey that you've created, you have an end point in mind, you know where you're going, you know what your what is, if I said it that way. However, as you map it out, you have no idea what's around the corner. You can't negotiate the curve before you get there. And yet the curve is just something on the way. It is not your end point, it's not your what. So at that point of negotiating with the curve, you learn a few things. You either, I'm not a driver, so I don't really know all the things you can learn about negotiating a curve in the ice storm or that sort of thing. But you have to It allows you to develop skills you didn't even know you needed. You didn't even know you had. And maybe you meet someone along the way that shares their wisdom with you and allow you to get past whatever that might have stopped you. And now it no longer stops you. Your tools of wisdom, your tools of getting further ahead to your what gets sharpened. So it just made me understand you don't know what's around the corner. You don't know what you're going to need. And you certainly don't know if my what is really big, I have no idea what's going to pop up to make me understand I am worthy of the what I am after. So I just wanted to share that.
And that pop-up could be somebody that tells you you can't do it and it's not possible. And you have to Absolutely. Then look inside yourself to see if you agree with that or not. And that's how you sharpen your tools. I liked here on page 61, and I think it's been mentioned before, but I think it's worth looking at it again. It says, thus the trickster can keep the universe together by offering proper resistance. And this made me wonder that if without any resistance, if we just imagined it and so it was, how would it all function? Like, how would we function actually without resistance? Like, what if you just dream something up and then everything that was vanished and the new thing was there? You know, how would that work with our experience, our identity, you know, keeping matter all in one spot? You know, would the table just float away because now I imagined a pot plant? Like, how would that actually work without resistance? You know, and I know Mike mentioned before he had an aha moment around resistance, and I'm not sure. I feel like you left me hanging a little bit on the edge of my seat, and I was just wondering if you could save me from that position with a bit more wisdom around your aha moment.
Well, I didn't say I have the solution. I just had the aha.
What was it?
No, what I'm saying is that I think that what I've been looking for, and this is kind of like typical, what you're looking for to help you get past your resistance is the resistance. So it's like I've been having this resistance to finding out what's the next step to creating, and I realize it's resistance. So it's like one of those, you know, who's on first kind of things. It's like I know there's something there, but I haven't figured it out yet, Marianne. But the thing that hit me too in this chapter was right in the last paragraph where he says that in order to have a new vision of anything, anytime, anywhere, you have to stop seeing yourself as separate from your desire. And whatever it is that you want or whatever your goal, you know, and we all touch on little pieces of it when we say, oh, you got to see yourself as already there. You got to imagine yourself in it. It's all different ways of saying the same thing. You got to not see yourself as being different from that is where you want to be. Just already see yourself there. Because guess what? Somewhere, if we imagine this time, space, whatever, universe, there's a point in the time, space continuum where that exists. So it's already there. It already exists. We just have to get in touch with where it is in space time and move ourselves there.
In fact, he's already shared with us that time and thought are the same thing. So if we've had a thought, we've actually created it.
Well, it's to me, I believe, you know, again, I listening to Nassim kind of bends my mind sometimes, but it also opens up things where I see this kind of whole grid of possibility everywhere, and that everything exists at some point in time everywhere. It's like that movie, right? Where that particular frame exists somewhere on that whole stream of movie. Well, move that into three dimensions, and now you have what we're talking about. It's like that exists somewhere, somehow in this whole continuum. How do we move ourselves to that point? And if we see it that way, we say, okay, what's been my resistance to moving there? I just got to move there. And once I pass that resistance, I'm back. I'm not sure, but I'm talking out loud, I guess, as I'm thinking about it.
Well, I think that it refers to what Marian said a little bit when she said, imagine, talking about the separation, imagine that there would be no resistance, there would be no program, there would be no identity. Then we would be actually be one with everything. In that moment, we would actually be not separated. And he's basically, as you said, Mike, at the end of the chapter, and I like to quote that because we're also coming slowly to the end of the show, he says that that is actually the solution. He said that this has been and will always be the secret of creativity, breaking free of separation. If we don't do that, we don't create. So, and it reminds me on what Marian shared about our practices. Some of us are practicing becoming that what we want to be or becoming it. So we are actually moving out of that own identity and becoming that goal, or what you called, Mike, becoming that thing in the universe somewhere. We are actually not only connecting, we are becoming it. We are changing completely ourselves and our mindset to become that. If we don't do that, we don't create, he says. We must tap into the imaginary realm, which is becoming it, to create a new storyline. We must return to unity, and then in order to separate again, which is basically to create something and then we go back to it. So maybe some last comments around that or whatever you would like to share?
Well, yeah,
That's okay. Go ahead, Mary.
Okay. It's a little bit of our answer of the question that Mike raised at the top of 58. So when we are not, so being in opposition to the previous way of thinking means that we are saying we're separate from the previous way of thinking. But if we allow them to be expressed, then the separation from that way of thinking is removed. There's no separation. That's where we are able to move into now the because that's been expressed and we're not separate, there's no barrier and we can keep moving into the imaginal and the new and the creative. So I see him saying that the allowing them to be expressed means we're allowing ourselves to not be separate from.
And I was going to say, it's kind of along the same lines. When I talk to people, when I'm teaching in a class or something, and I'll say, look around you, look around the room. And pretty much everything that you see, the walls, the pictures, the couch, the chair, the everything, started out in the imaginal realm at some point. And someone pulled the thought from that place. And they didn't get stuck in their inertia. They broke through it and took action and started to create. And then somehow or other, in that connection, without the separation, in the connection, I was drawn to it to go, oh, I really like that photo, or I really like the design of that chair, or I really like, and then I end up bringing it into my world. The actual thought or image that came from the imaginal somewhere else, but somehow I was tapped into it a long time, maybe even before it was created. So when we just walk around and we notice things, it's like everything that humanity produces comes from the imaginal. And that doesn't even tap into the bigger picture of nature. And when we're drawn to the little sparkling stone or the leaf or whatever it is that we pull in, but I mean it really becomes this place of wonder and it makes you feel like, you know, what pops into my head, if I just push through that inertia and I begin to create it, someone else may be tapping in and it may bring them more joy. Or you know, so it is, there is this interconnected web, this weaving, and it's like so exciting. It's really so big and exciting. So that's what I had to say to it.
Thank you, Trina. If anyone else who want to make a last comment? I think you really summarized it kind of like Trina, because what Dr. Fred L. Wolf calls this is the imaginal realm, you know, when you go tapping into your inner. And that is really the transition we need to make from the reality, so-called real, to the imaginal realm. And in this discussion, we discussed what's in between, and that's the trickster, the resistance. So it's the time now to conclude our studies, and we thank you for your time and your sharing. And you matter, you count, and you will always make a difference. And we look forward to see you next week as we make a leap to greater consciousness. Have a powerful week and allow your light to shine. As always, all good things to you.
Oh, you too.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you for listening to Quantum Leap Book Club. For more information where you can contact us, go to loaradionetwork.com/quantum-leap. Have a great week.